Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369, the place to do that. Unfortunately, the NBA season has come to a close, but that does not mean we're going anywhere. We've got NBA trade rumors going on. We got the draft less than a week away now, and then free agency just a few weeks ahead of us. So plenty to discuss with the offseason. The offseason will be a lot of fun to talk about, but unfortunately, no more games till the start of October, unless you're excited about Summer League. But regardless, hit us up at 331-979-1369. Drop us your text and your voicemails. You want to talk about the finals, the way that ended. You want to talk about free agency or the draft. Make sure you hit us up on our text and voicemail line. Happy Friday to you, Matt. What a way to close out the NBA season. It's been a ridiculous season. A lot has happened, but unfortunately, with Klay Thompson's injury, it kind of soured the way things ended last night. I don't know about you, but it was good. At least I felt good to see the Raptors at least win and pull this out, and it just didn't look like Golden State had enough. But how you doing?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, kind of a bummer way to end the year. Yeah, it was a really good game, back and forth game. Like right from the jump, that first quarter was crazy. The Raps got out to that early big lead. The Warriors withstood it and then fought their way back. And then I think it was like 33-30 after one quarter. You're like, all right, we got a game. And the really sad part is that we were getting one of those vintage like Game Six Klay games. You know, he's put up so many epic performances in Game Sixes through this 5-year run that the Warriors have had, and he was well on his way. He still finished with 30 points despite leaving that game when he tore the ACL. Of course, you know, everybody giving him props for coming back on the court to hit those free throws. And it looked like he was, after he hit those free throws, trying to stay in the game on that defensive possession, but Steve Kerr had the Warriors foul to get him off the court. Obviously, that ended up being a wise call, especially after everything that happened with KD. I am happy for the Raptors. I was hoping we would get a seventh game just because I wasn't ready for the season to end yet. And obviously, game sevens provide so much drama. But it's crazy to think about the fact that, I mean, we got a game five. You know, nobody expected the Raptors to sweep this series, even knowing that KD might miss the entirety of it. But still, to think about the fact that if the Warriors don't fight back and win game two and the Raptors just sweep this series, we're not talking about a torn Achilles for Kevin Durant in game five. We're not talking about a fluke torn ACL for Klay Thompson after they scrape out a game five victory to force a game six. It's just insane to think about the magnitude of what happened, not just last night, but in the last two games of this series, what it means for the NBA as a whole this offseason with free agency, the power dynamic of which teams are favored to win it all next year. The things are wide open, and it's because this team trying desperately to hold on to their dynasty fought and clawed their way to forcing six games against a team that was clearly, Toronto Raptors, the better, deeper, healthier team. If this is a Raptors sweep, I mean, we get Klay and KD next season, and now we don't. And that's the really bitter pill to swallow when you think about this series.
Yeah, I'm curious if this changes the Golden State Warriors' plan at all for next season, or at least for the offseason, thinking about all the money that they're going to have to spend to retain KD and also Klay Thompson. You know, if Klay Thompson was healthy and this didn't happen to him last night and you go into the offseason with a fully healthy Klay, I think that changes the conversation a little bit, but now you're talking about having to invest, if you're the Warriors, in two guys that are not going to play at all next season, and you don't know how guys are going to return off an ACL, and you're talking about Klay Thompson at an ACL and then also Kevin Durant in an Achilles, and that's just as bad. You don't really know what they're going to end up being. So I think it's going to be a difficult, difficult offseason for the Golden State Warriors. Do you think that this is the end of their dynasty run as we know it? And it's been one hell of a run for this Warriors team. You know, no doubt, I think all of us can kind of reflect back if this is really the start of the end of this dynasty, how incredible this run was. And I don't think anybody can match up necessarily to this Warriors team since the Bulls run in the 90s. So do you think this is kind of their end, the start to the end of the Warriors dynasty as we see it?
No, I don't. Look, everybody knows that Klay has the identity of one of the toughest dudes in this league right now. And, we're hearing per usual with this torn ACL, 9 to 10 month recovery timeline for Klay. Would anyone be surprised if he shaves 1 or 2 months off of that projected return? Because that's the kind of player that Klay has always been. You know, he was playing through, a pulled hammy for the better part of this series too. He had to sit out that game 3, of course, which cost the Warriors dearly. But I mean, I think pretty much with KD, you know, the ruptured Achilles, he's going to be out all next year. And maybe the Warriors with Steph and Dre and Iggy and whatever, other cast of characters they, choose to round out the roster with next season can still scrap together enough wins to get to the playoffs next year. Maybe by the tail end of next season, Klay is back on the floor. And even if next season is just a wash, and even if KD, instead of just opting into his $31 million and doing his rehab with the Warriors because he wants to come back and reclaim the title with the Warriors, misses all of next season and the Warriors don't win the title next season, I mean, Klay's not going anywhere. The Warriors, yeah, it's going to cost them, but they're going to keep Klay Thompson, as well they should. Iggy, as long as he's capable of playing, will stick around on cheap veteran deals so he can still be a part of this team. Draymond is the one variable that I think he might want the money. He's due for free agency next season, next summer. A year from this summer, he'll be an unrestricted free agent. That might be tough to be able to keep Draymond in the fold. But, I mean, it's not like these guys are all washed. Yeah, KD's getting a little bit up there. Steph and Klay have been around for a while. They got a lot of miles on their legs. But to say that last night was the end of the Warriors dynasty, I think is foolish. Like, they battled and battled and battled and almost forced a game 7 when they had no business doing so with that insanely depleted, unhealthy roster. And Stephen Klay are still Stephen Klay. And even if KD leaves, even if KD doesn't play next year at all, and the Warriors don't win next year, I still think that this Warriors team has another title.
Yeah, you just got to think about Steph Curry's health, too. I mean, there's no guarantee he stays healthy either. And all the injuries he's dealt with, too, throughout his career so far. And like you said, too, I think you hit it on the head. The perfect point is all the miles on these guys' legs, especially if you've been with this Warriors team for the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, Klay Thompson, before he even returns to the floor, he's going to be 30. Think about that. A 30-year-old recovering from an ACL injury is a whole hell of a lot different than, say, a Zach LaVine who's recovering from an ACL injury at 22. So I think there is some general concern about what kind of player he's going to be when he returns. I think it's fair to ask those questions and to not feel 100% about saying, yeah, you know what, it's going to take a year and he'll be back exactly like he was before. If I'm a Warriors fan, I would be kind of concerned right now, especially all the money that you would have to invest just to retain him. Because what are you going to do? Just let him walk? Of course not. And same thing with Kevin Durant. You're not just going to let him walk for nothing. Yeah. Like Kevin Durant probably more so than Klay, but you're going to retain Klay. I think there is some concern, though, if you are a Warriors fan, like, you know, we're going to pay the max to Klay Thompson, and what happens if he comes back and he's only 70% of what he was? Similar to kind of the way we talked about DeMarcus Cousins, and I know it's a little bit of a different injury, but still, any guys who suffer an injury this severe at 28, 29, 30, especially with all the miles on Klay's legs, I would say I would be at least a little bit concerned on how he would return and having to invest all that money as the Warriors. So I don't think the dynasty run is over at all either. I think that's severely underestimating what Steph Curry can still do. Same thing with Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, and a few of those other guys on the team. And I think the Warriors are just going to have to be creative this summer. So we'll find out.
And look, just, you know, to put it in perspective about, you know, are these star players who make up the core of this Warriors dynasty, are they getting too old? Let's not forget that when the Bulls got their second three-peat, in 95-96, MJ was 32. And then the following year, the fifth title, he was 33. Their sixth and final title, he was 34. MJ played all 82 regular season games and every postseason game in that second three-peat run. Now, you know, MJ is a god all to himself, and it's crazy to expect the same comeback for Klay and or KD when they get back, that they'll be able to be all-star caliber, MVP caliber players who were playing, or, you know, all NBA players who were playing all 82 games. That's probably not likely, but I'm just saying, to say that the Warriors dynasty is over because these guys are now going to miss Klay and KD probably for an entire season and they're getting old, young players don't win titles. Klay is the exception to the rule. When you think about Klay's resume at 27 and the fact that he has two finals MVPs along with two championships and all these other accolades that he added to his resume just last night, most often it's the aged veterans, long in the tooth players who are winning titles. So, you know, to suggest that Steph and Klay and KD and Draymond and Iggy can all rally together again, if not next season, the year after. And yeah, they're going to be paying a lot of money, but you're paying a lot of money to the best player in the league and one of the top, arguably 15 players in the league when it comes to keeping KD and Klay.
I still think now more so than ever, I think Kevin Durant's still going to be gone. I don't think he picks up that player option. That's just me, though. Like, if you're Kevin Durant, why would you risk it? Why would you not signing a 4-year max deal in case you come back and you're not the same guy? Like, there is a small possibility that you don't come back the same guy that you were before your injury.
Well, look, Kevin Durant has more money than he will ever need in his lifetime and the, you know, generations
that's
of his
true,
family's
but that's not how these guys think, though.
So it's not like he's got to be like, oh, I got to secure the bag in case I don't come back from this. Maybe that's a factor, but I don't know if you saw, I think it was Ramona Shelburne's ESPN report this morning. There was apparently a FaceTime conversation between Klay and KD last night that included the phrase, quote, unfinished business. So everyone who thinks that KD is as good as gone, Maybe he's not. And maybe the Warriors are ready to throw a whole bunch of money at him and Klay and say, you know what, we don't believe this dynasty is over. We'll happily continue paying luxury tax to be well over the salary cap. And we want to keep these guys around. We don't want this dynasty.
It'll be interesting to see what happens this offseason. So, but yeah, unfortunately for Klay, the injury stinks and it comes at the worst time, too. So
it sucks.
But shout out to the Raptors.
And that's the other. Yeah. We'll get to the Raptors in a second. But, you know, the thing that I was thinking about as we were watching this unfold in game five with KD and then Klay landing awkwardly and then hearing shortly after the game ended that he had a torn ACL. I mean, the Warriors just were so, bit by the injury bug this year, and it's a miracle that I think they got as far as they did. And it made me as a Bulls fan think back to that sixth and final title in 98. When you think about everything that the Bulls had to deal with that year, I mean, Scottie was dealing with his bad back, including basically being unplayable and immobile in the finals against the Jazz the second time around. Dennis was banged up and aging and also like AWOL all the time. Luke Longley was dealing with, bad knees, bad feet, bad everything. Tony Kukoc, he was also like, he stepped up and actually started a lot of that final series against the Jazz instead in Rodman's place because Rodman was so banked up. But I mean, that team was dragged to that title by a 34-year-old MJ and all of his supporting cast were either ineffective or banged up. It's crazy when you go back and think about how improbable it was for the Bulls to win that second time against the Jazz when everything was stacked against them. And like, because that's what we could have seen. We could have, in a different universe, seen that play out. We could have seen that story play out where on one fateful moment in game five, you know, Scottie's back gets completely thrown out. Or in, you know, one fateful moment in game six, MJ comes down awkwardly when he goes, you know, and gets the quick 2-for-1 basket at the end of the game. And maybe he lands awkwardly and tears an ACL. Like, you know, it's crazy because what just happened to the Warriors in this series could have and maybe should have happened to the Bulls in 98. And the fact that they won that title was
just
crazy.
Just goes to show you, when you have your talent on the floor, it's win now, especially when you've got guys of their talent. You know, KD and Steph and Clay. It's like you never know when something like this can happen. And it can happen on the biggest stage, too, in the NBA Finals, which is very unusual. We don't normally see star players get hurt on the biggest stage in the biggest game either. So when we saw two players get hurt, too, in Klay Thompson and KD. But, yeah, interesting to say the very least. But let's talk about the Raptors really quick, and then we'll get on to some Bulls stuff. Shout out to the Raptors. Kawhi Leonard had probably one of the best playoff runs we've seen in a very, very long time. Talk about not skipping a beat and not missing LeBron James throughout these playoffs. I mean, Kawhi stepped in and was that guy. Every single night it seemed like a shot went down for him and just had everything cooking. And I think the coolest thing about Kawhi, I think, was being able to get his entire team to buy in and to run with the persona that he has as being calm, cool, and collective. And you saw that even when they won two games in Oakland, how serious and calm they were, and they knew that they still had unfinished business and they needed to finish off that series. But Kawhi Leonard had a hell of a playoff run this year. So it's going to be equally as interesting to see if he ends up staying in Toronto or if he decides to take his talents maybe to LA, to the Clippers, like a lot of people are speculating. But nonetheless, definitely deserved the finals MVP last night, Shout out to Kawhi Leonard.
As I said earlier, you know, talking about the accolades that he added to his resume with this, you know, culmination in this title just last night. So first off, there's this. Kawhi finished with 732 points in this postseason run, the third most by any player in a single postseason, behind MJ with 759 in 92 and LeBron in 2018 with 748. That's crazy. Playoffs, players to score over 700 in a playoff run and win the title. Again, MJ in 92, Hakeem Olajuwon in 95, Shaq in 2000, and Kawhi in 2019. The third player in NBA history to win the finals MVP with two different teams. The first player in NBA history ever to win finals MVP with teams in each conferences, East and West. And here's the one that is craziest to me. I'm not sure if you saw this stat last night, Jordan. I think it was part of like the late night Sports Center. Here's most points by a duo in a single postseason run in NBA history. In 2000, Shaq and Kobe combined for 1,172 points on their way to a title. In 1995, Hakeem and Clyde the Glide Drexler combined for 1,175 points, again, on their way to a title. In 92, when the Bulls beat the Blazers, Jordan and Pippen combined for 1,187 points, which is tied for second. First all-time, 2012 LeBron and D-Wade Miami Heat on their way to a title, 1,222 points. You know who's tied now with MJ and Pippen in 92 with 1,187 combined postseason points? Kawhi Leonard and Pascal Siakam. That is crazy! That is fucking crazy.
Guess what Pascal Siakam is? A G League product. So anybody out there saying second round picks don't mean shit and you're not going to find deep talent in the G League, take a look at Pascal Siakam for instance.
Talk about undrafted players. Rockford's right. Own Fred Van Vliet. Can we talk about Fred Van Vliet for a second? I remember watching him in the tourney, you know, when his team was, when he was like the stud of that team, Wichita State, right? And I was like, wow, this kid, he can ball, but like he can't play in the NBA. He's too small. He's not that athletic. Anytime the Raptors were like running down on the shot clock and had no prospects for a good open shot, he just chucked the ball up from wherever he was and it went in like 7 times out of 10. It was crazy how good Fred VanVleet played in this series.
Pretty funny. He gave a Rockford shout out too at the end. So shout out to everybody in Rockford. It's cool what he does with the community there too. I'm just talking to a few people.
Did you see that Kawhi was one vote away from being unanimous Finals MVP? Fred VanVleet got one vote from Hubie Brown.
Did Hubie Brown even know he was submitting his vote?
I don't know. But God bless Hubie Brown. That's hilarious.
Oh, God.
But for real, Fred VanVleet was irreplaceable in that series.
Pretty incredible what your role players can do, right? And look, like, if we're looking at that Raptors team real quick, how many legitimate superstars are on that team? One, right? Kawhi Leonard. Outside of that is a lot of role players. Like Kyle Lowry, okay, he five-time All-Star. He's gone to the All-Star game five seasons in a row now and had some pretty bad games in this playoffs run so far, but was also clutch at times when they needed him too. So I think it was a combination of underdogs, grinders, your guys that can contribute right away, and then you had Kawhi Leonard to that mix, and it seemed like, for whatever reason, so quickly, too, and I found that Doris Burke asked a perfect question, and, you know, you could sit down with Nick Nurse, I think, for 5 hours, and he wouldn't be able to explain it to you, but she asked, like, how were you able to get these guys so quickly to find chemistry to build together and all of a sudden go on this unbelievable run? Like, you're talking about adding one of their really important pieces in this playoff in Marcus Gasol right at the trade deadline. So I just find it very fascinating that this team was able to put it all together the way that they were so quickly. It would be a shame if Kawhi Leonard didn't stay in Toronto. I would like to see them to try to maintain that.
I mean, man... Did you hear the way he was talking last night in all of his post-game interviews? He was happy, but he also continuously referred to the Raptors as they. Not we, they. You know, I just told them when I got here that, you know, that they can do this and that, you know, this sets them up for, you know, a great future. It was like he was talking like he already had one foot out the door with the Larry O'Brien trophy. And honestly, like, obviously... The Raptors fan base would love to get Kawhi to stay and the fact that he wins the title as a motivating factor to stay and try and repeat. But even if he bolts, the dude's just a legend in Toronto forever now. The team's first championship, the franchise's first championship. Vince Carter couldn't deliver it. Tracy McGrady couldn't deliver it. Chris Bosh couldn't deliver it. All, you know, Kyle Lowry and DeRozan couldn't deliver it. They make, you know, and, you know, obviously also major tip of the cap to Masai Ujiri, who maybe had one of the biggest gambles of the NBA from executive coach, player, whoever, over the last couple of years when he made that Kawhi trade, knowing that it could be a one-and-done experiment.
Dude, how about Woj, though, for a second? He's on the podium trying to receive an award and, like, talk for the first time since they just were announced that they were NBA champions, and Woj drops the bomb that the Washington Wizards are going to try to steal him away from the Raptors. It's like, what are you doing? You couldn't wait a half hour. You couldn't wait a half hour.
And there was a follow-up to that earlier today where basically some other person, like, negated, or the Raptors, like, negated that report.
Oh,
or that the Wizards negated that report. Who the hell knows what's going on there?
I wonder if it's going to depend on Kawhi staying. If Kawhi stays, he'll stay in Toronto. But if Kawhi says, you know what, I'm out of here, maybe he sees, you know, he brought the title there, he stuck it out long enough, and maybe he'll try a new task. But I mean, like, as a GM, how can you pass up something like $10 million a year? You just can't. You can't do that. If they're throwing $10 million a year at you, you got to go take it. I don't care how big of a dumpster fire the Wizards are.
That would be crazy, though, if the Wizards actually managed to pry him away from Toronto, you know, a la, like, the Cubs getting Theo Epstein to come to the North Side and be like, hey, fix our completely dilapidated, broken organization, please.
Yeah.
But, man, okay, so here's a question for you, Jordan. Obviously, everybody's talking about how not only KD, but now Klay, likely missing the bulk, if not entirety, of the 1920 season. Steph, try as he may, and his usage percentage is probably going to be through the roof next season. The Warriors now, for the first time in 5 years coming into the offseason, are not the favorites to win the title next year. And, you know, the Vegas odds have already been adjusted after the Klay ACL news. And, I mean, does whatever team gets Kawhi, do they lead the pack as favorites? Whether it's staying in Toronto and defending the title, knowing that they are the powers of the East, or say if Kawhi bolts to the Clippers and maybe the Clippers, you know, keep the core that surprised everybody and made their way to the playoffs, you know, push the Warriors to six games, maybe add another player next to Kawhi, another star next to Kawhi, are the Clippers the favorites? Because the people saying right now, assuming that the Lakers get Anthony Davis, and if LeBron is healthy and Anthony Davis is healthy, that the Lakers are now the favorites to win the title, I think that's crazy. I don't know about you.
Yeah, and especially what we know with LeBron and, like, trying to play with the new superstars, right? It takes him at least a year to find chemistry with those guys. So I wouldn't peg the Lakers right away as my favorite. I did find it very bizarre that the Clippers were, like, third or fourth best odds to win the title next year at 6-1. I was like, really? Like, come on. Like, nobody's even signed yet. Like, let's relax on that. But I think it's interesting because it's hard to peg, like, a new... Like you were saying earlier, it's wide open at this point. It's very hard to peg somebody as a clear favorite for next year because 40% of the league is a free agent, right?
Yeah.
And so we don't know where a lot of these guys are going to land, but certainly I don't think that the Warriors are going to be... They're not in the same type of conversation like they were these last 4, 5, 6 years. Next year is going to be... Yeah, they're going to be a pretty solid team still in that West, but... Like we talk about the Western Conference all the time, and depending on if guys end up going to the Clippers and a few of those other teams with cap space, we'd be talking about another loaded West again next year, and the Warriors could end up going from being the first and second seed for the last half a decade to being a middle-of-the-pack playoff team, 5, 6, 7 seed, which is so bizarre to think about right now is the fact that the Warriors could potentially be a 5, 6, 7, or an 8 seed next year.
It is crazy. And, you know, this is the first year that the Warriors, once they made their way to, you know, the latter stages of their playoff run, had to do so without home court advantage. And, you know, sometimes that's important. But look at this series that just happened. The road team won 5 of the 6 games in the NBA Finals. So
I find that wild.
It's crazy. And usually home court advantage in the NBA is way more significant than, say, the NHL playoffs, where, you know, 8 seeds upset 1 seeds and 7s upset 2s a lot more frequently. And, you know, road teams won a bunch of games in this year's Stanley Cup Finals as well between Boston and St. Louis. You know, with St. Louis winning the pivotal deciding Game 7 on Boston's home ice. So, but that's always been more true with the NHL than with the NBA. NBA home court is huge. Whether it is, you know, some extra love from the refs or the crowd being a bigger factor or being more comfortable with, you know, your floor, your stadium's hardwood, your stadium's rims, all that kind of stuff. And people saying that the Warriors aren't making the playoffs next year, I think is crazy. I saw all kinds of those takes once the Clay ACL news hit late last night. It was like, oh, man, like this Warriors team... Like, they won't even make the playoffs in the West. I'm like, dude, they have Steph Curry. They have Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Iggy. Like, that, like, they're, yeah, they're probably not going to be the 1 seed. They might not even be a top 4 seed, but the Warriors are making the playoffs next year. Unless they just decide to just shut it down. Because that's another thing that I've heard. It's like, maybe the Warriors should just shut everything down and be like, all right, Clay, you're out all year. Don't try and, like, hurry yourself back. Take the full time you need to recover from the ACL. KD, if he's staying around, obviously, is out the whole year. Steph, load management this year. You'll play, but serious load management. Same thing with you, Draymond. And basically just keep the guys on the shelf, keep the guys on ice, and say, we're not going for the title this year. We're going to use this year to recuperate, rest, you know, take a breather. Steve Kerr even was like joking about this in an interview last night. He's like, yeah, man, maybe we should all just, like, you know, take a gap year. Just go, you know, like, drink wine in Europe and chill out and then come back and try and win it again in 2021. Like, and maybe in the meantime, if they actually do just rest guys, they are a team that misses the playoffs, and maybe the Warriors get lucky in the lottery. How unfair would that be?
Even if they decide to shut it all down, Yeah, I don't want to see them in the lottery. I don't even want to think about that idea because all it would take is them to move up to the top 5 or top 7 if they do end up in the lottery, and that'll just make me even more pissed off because they would continue their title run because they would still have Clay signed, and God knows if they re-sign Kevin Durant. I just don't even want to think about that possibility. But I think that they're going to be a playoff team next year. I think that's like still having Steph Curry and Draymond Green and a few of the other pieces. And they're going to have to be creative this summer, too, in terms of guys that they're going to be able to sign veterans to fill those roles of not only Kevin Durant, but Klay Thompson as well. So it definitely will be interesting to see. But yeah, finals are over. The NBA season comes to a close. It's been a crazy NBA season. Now time to shift our gears to the offseason and the NBA draft, which, you know, last year was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun talking about free agency and talking about the draft. So beyond that, to Summer League, we'll get excited for in about a month and a half here. At least, actually, probably more close to a month now. We're going to have Summer League basketball back. So it won't be that long till we can at least watch some games again and watch some young players play. But, Matt, before we talk about Zach LaVine and take maybe some mailbag questions to round out the week, I had this thought before, and I wanted to get your thought on this really quick. So I was watching some old Michael Jordan highlights, and they came across Twitter the other night, and I retweeted a video specifically that was just a minute long of MJ finishing through contact at the rim and just doing unfreaking believable stuff. And it made me sit back and think about how the modern NBA is right now in terms of calling fouls. And I just, how many free throws a game do you think Michael Jordan would shoot in the modern NBA right now if he were to play today? Because that dude got absolutely fucking hammered every time he went to the basket by two, three dudes. How many free throws a game do you think he would shoot now if he played today?
Like a James Harden amount. You know, that's
like 12, 13,
that's,
14
that's
game.
The king of free throw attempts in the league right now. James Harden, the way that his game is kind of, you know, geared towards getting those fouls called. Like not an exaggeration, probably close to 20 a game.
That is, it's just unbelievable. I was just...
Because you know that MJ, whether it was, you know, getting a guy to foul him when he would, you know, pull up for a mid-range and draw contact, or in transition drawing contact, or just one-on-one beating his guy, driving to the hole and drawing a foul at the rim, contact, he did that 10 times a game. So, I mean, there you know, multiply that by... That's 20 free throw attempts a game.
Yeah, easily. And you look at some of his seasons, you know... 86-87, he averaged 12 free throws a game. 87-88, he averaged 10.5 a game. So I was just, you know, I hadn't even looked to see how many free throws he was shooting back in the late 80s, early 90s.
And that was before he really put the work in to build up his upper body strength and was just like a scrawny little kid getting hammered when he went down the lane.
Way more physical than it is right now. So I was blown away, and I was trying to come up with some type of solidified number of how many free throws per game he would end up in the prime of his career. As if he's averaging 12 back then, I got to say it's probably close to 20 then if he played now. Because think about it, nobody could stop him at the basket. They'd have to hack him every time to be able to stop him from scoring, going to the basket, especially the types of moves he was able to pull off. It's just, to me, is mind-blowing. So I was curious about your thoughts. So yeah, you think James Harden level? I think even beyond James Harden level.
If you think about that season in particular, 86-87, when he, you know, so that was the first full season after his broken foot year, where he had 11.9 free throw attempts per game. The, you know, he was the scoring champ of the league with 37.1 points per game. If you fast forward that, put that, you know, plug and play that in today's NBA with that, you know, significantly ramped up free throw attempts, you're talking about a guy maybe averaging close to 45 points per game.
Fucking ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. That's why I never want to hear any Michael Jordan slander ever from anybody.
Only one GOAT. Two three-peats. You know how hard three-peats are? We just saw with this Warriors team that fell apart how hard three-peats are. MJ did it twice.
It's just unbelievable.
Other than Scottie Pippen, completely different rosters.
It just blows my mind. Every time I watch film on him, I just... My jaw drops to the floor, and it's just it's incredible to think what he would have been able to do now if he played in his prime right now. It's just it's crazy. So I had that thought when that video came across my timeline, and I retweeted it on a Locked On Bulls account. It's just it's awesome. I watched it probably two dozen times already, and just watching some of the ways he finished and the things that he was able to do is just unbelievable. But anyway, let's get on to Zach LaVine now, man. And I'm going to try my best, Matt, but I might... I'm a ticking time bomb right now in terms of the way people are talking about Zach LaVine at this point, because I just... I can't deal with it. Like, have we really, have Bulls fans really switched their mind on Zach LaVine in 2.5 months since we were talking about him at the trade deadline in February? The way people are talking about him seems like the trade value for Zach LaVine is about as equal as it is to Chris Dunn. Like, people are saying peanuts to trade Zach LaVine away for. I don't understand it. Can you talk me off the ledge a little bit?
Well, I mean, not quite, because nobody's giving... Not quite, because nobody's given you.
You know
the
what I'm saying, though. Can you talk me off the ledge here a little bit?
Talking about with Zach. I do know what you're saying. It's like it's people grossly undervaluing Zach LaVine. You know, there's just some haters that have never believed in LaVine on Bulls Twitter. You know, there's Coach Ron who just like jabs LaVine at every opportunity and really believes that the Bulls, if that offer were on the table, 7 and LaVine for 4 and Lonzo should make that deal. And you know, and we were talking the other day about how our pal Ricky O'Donnell also, and this is mostly because he's so high on Jared Culver and would take Culver at 4, also loves that deal. But I mean, like, and then like somebody else was, you know, saying to me, because I was like, dude, we're talking about a guy who averaged 25-5-5 in his first healthy season off an ACL. Yeah, he was doing so on a bad losing team, but he was still averaging 25-5-5, and is one of the most athletic guys in the league. And we're just gonna say that he's just like, oh, just swap him for a fourth pick in a really bad draft class? What the hell are people talking about with this? And then somebody clapped back at me and was like, well, yeah, how were his defensive numbers? And I was like, oh, right, because yes, we all know that Zach LaVine is a subpar defensive player, but somehow that negates everything that he did this season that was incredibly impressive, notching up his offensive stats across the board, including being a better facilitator and kicking up his assists, in addition to being a pretty efficient scorer. Like, what? I don't understand this. Like, here's my pal, Bulldog Kevin Anderson, who's our executive producer for Outsiders, who broke it down this way on Twitter yesterday. Why rumors that the Bulls trading LaVine for Lonzo and the fourth pick makes no sense to me. You only need to pick 4 to make sure you get Darius Garland, but you don't take Darius Garland if you trade for Ball. So you take Jared Culver instead, a guy who might actually still be there at 7. So basically you're trading Zach LaVine for Jared Culver. Hard pass.
Exactly.
That's
what
how
we
I
said
see
yesterday,
it. I don't know
too.
About you,
it was like we're like trying to figure out why would you move up if you're getting Lonzo Ball? Like the whole point to move up to 4 would be to be able to take Darius Garland if you were really that high on him. I seriously don't understand it. This isn't NBA 2K. That's like, and there are people out there too that feel the same exact way. They're absolutely outraged that they're undervaluing, underestimating Zach LaVine's ability. And I completely agree with those fans. And I think they should be louder because right now the noise is everybody's ready to just ship Zach LaVine off and wipe their hands clean of him. Like, I get it. Right now he's taking up 25% of your cap space. The dude is 25. He just came off an ACL injury not even 18 months ago. Let me tell you this, Matt, because it made me so mad that people like all of a sudden wanted Zach LaVine to figure everything out about his game in 1 year that he returned. One single year since his ACL. There's 24 guys in the NBA, in NBA history, that have averaged 23 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and over 50% effective field goal percentage at 25 or younger. 24 players in the entirety of the NBA history. Zach LaVine is one of those players. Hold on 1 second, I'm going to give you the list. So the list of the players here, LeBron James did it 6 times, James Harden 3 times, Kevin Durant twice, Giannis twice, Devin Booker twice, Kevin Love, Dwayne Wade, Bradley Beal, Stephen Curry, Joe Johnson, Victor Oladipo, Zach LaVine. Those are all players that are still active. Here are the ones that are not active. Chris Webber, David Thompson did it twice, Oscar Robinson, Chris Mullin, T-Mac, MJ did it 3 times, Clyde Drexler, Walter Davis, Adrian Dantley, Charles Barkley did it twice, Kareem did it 3 times, and Mark Aguirre did it once. 24 players. Like, I mean, what are we talking about?
That's a list of Hall of Famers.
What are we talking about that you want to trade Zach LaVine and your 7th pick for Lonzo Ball in the 4th pick? You got to be kidding me. You want this Bulls team to be any better? I don't understand it. It's absolutely unbelievable how much people have flipped the switch on Zach LaVine in 2 months. It makes me so mad.
people keep talking about it as like, oh, empty stats. He gives you empty stats.
It's bullshit.
But like, no, no. You know who gives you empty stats? Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis. That's why we traded those guys. That is the definition of empty stats. Zach LaVine, he's probably not a number one, maybe not even a number two guy on a championship caliber roster. But he's certainly the number one and the number two guy on this roster right now that's trying to get more competitive. And swapping him for Lonzo, we know that this team needs a facilitator. But if you get rid of Zach to add Lonzo, who do you have to facilitate to? I mean, yeah, you still got Lowry and Wendell in your front court, but those guys are, you know, maybe Lowry is developing that element to his game of a guy who can create his own shot, in addition to being a guy that gets his looks fed to him from a true passing point guard like Lonzo Ball. But, I mean, Zach LaVine was this team's leading scorer this past season for a reason. He was a near 25 points per game scorer this season for a reason. Yeah, Lonzo is a better defender, and he is a high IQ basketball player for a guy as young as he is. But he also is an injury concern. He also is a guy who can't spread the floor for you when he plays off the ball. A terrible free throw shooter. Like, we all know these weaknesses to Lonzo's game, and to me, there are more question marks and weaknesses around Lonzo Ball right now than there are around Zach LaVine. And there are probably some of our listeners out there that disagree with that, and that's fine. But I'm saying the level of disrespect that I have seen for Zach LaVine on Bulls Twitter over the last 48 hours when these rumors started is ridiculous to me.
Where do you think you're pulling 23 points a game on? Are you going to pull that out of your ass from somebody? Not every dude in the NBA can just come in and score 23 points a game.
Lonzo's not giving you 23 points a game.
Jared Culver's not giving you 23 points a game.
Absolutely not. Absolutely
I just,
not.
I don't get it. I don't understand. What is the logic of doing that? On paper, sure, it looks great. Lonzo Ball, Jarrett Culver, Otto Porter Jr., Lauri Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr. Great. In 2K, that's probably a lot of fun to play with. We're talking about real-life basketball
here.
Yeah,
but, I mean, that team's scoring, that team's struggling to score 100 points a game.
Yes. It's just, you don't pull stats like that, like Zach LaVine dropped last year, out of your ass. And not every player can do that. Like, people think that it's easy to do that. Zach LaVine had an unbelievable season last year. The Bulls hit the... And this is the biggest thing that pisses me off. You want to talk about Zach LaVine's defense. The Bulls hit the worst defense in the NBA last year.
Right.
He played alongside half a team that was G-leaguers. And you want to come at me and say that Zach LaVine's defense was atrocious and look at his defensive box plus minus? He's had the best defensive box plus minus of his entire career. This last season, it's just, it's unbelievable. They don't take everything into account. It just, the disrespect, like you said, for Zach LaVine is absolutely 100% unbelievable, and I just don't get it.
And there, I've also heard and seen on Twitter over the last, you know, couple of days when this rumor came out, that there's still a lot of people out there who are citing Zach's contract as a bad contract. And I'm like,
I don't get that.
I mean, excuse me, what? No. Jabari, that was a bad contract. Dwayne Wade, terrible contract. There are lots of players in the NBA right now getting paid way more than they're worth. We just brought one in, an Otto Porter Jr. Valuable role player, savvy vet, at a position of need for the Bulls when they made the deal. Way more overpaid than Zach LaVine, if you can even say that Zach LaVine is overpaid. Zach's not even making 20 mil, and he just gave us 25-5-5 last season. How many players around the NBA put up those kinds of stats that don't make $20 million or more? I'm guessing it's a pretty short list.
If the cap goes up, I know it doesn't go up this summer, but if it goes up next year to what they're projecting at $118 million, Zach LaVine is only going to be taking up 17 and some change percent of your cap space. Where do you find a borderline all-star that only takes up 17% of your cap space besides striking gold on a rookie, scale deal? You don't. That is a great deal, and that's why it makes him even more valuable in trades. Regardless of what you think of his game, his contract on top of that is still super valuable. That's what you have to understand, and it's not a bad contract at all. Even last summer, Matt, when we were talking about this, we said it wouldn't be that bad because if the cap goes up in his third and fourth year, You're talking about having a borderline all-star and a fraction of what a lot of other teams are paying for that type of production and that type of quality. It's just... That too just makes me infuriated because it's not a bad contract.
Yeah, it's not. I see a lot of Bulls people on Twitter saying that they think it is, that like trading LaVine for the fourth would not only be a good move because you get the fourth pick and, you know, whether Lonzo's involved or not, and you'd take it on Darius Garland or you use it for Culver or whatever, but the other added perk about trading LaVine would be like getting off of his money. Coach Ron was talking about, and again, like Coach Ron is like the biggest LaVine hater on Bulls Twitter. Coach Ron is a guy who's been around and knows his stuff, and he's entitled to his opinion. I happen to disagree with it, but he was saying, like, you know, just think about the fact that here's the projected, you know, rookie scale contract for the number four pick in this draft, and, you know, rookie scales are a lot bigger than they used to be even not that long ago, but it's a lot less money than you're paying Zach LaVine, as if, like, paying the rookie scale deal for the number four pick you would get by swapping LaVine is some extra huge added bonus by getting off of LaVine's deal that, as a veteran, borderline all-star, his contract is bigger than a rookie scale contract. Like, what? To see him make that argument, I was like, dude, what the fuck are you talking about?
331-979-1369. I want to hear from both sides, people that think Zach LaVine can be really a part of a contending team and a winning team and think that there's a huge future in Zach LaVine's in front of Zach LaVine. Or if there's people out there that said, you know what, no, he's not the type of player that you're going to build a winning team around. I want to hear from both sides, so hit us up at 331-979-1369. That's where I need to get, is meet me halfway if you don't like Zach LaVine's game and understand that at least his value is higher than Alonzo Ball and a fourth pick and having to take on Solomon Hill's contract. And then on top of that, you have to give up your seventh pick. Like, please tell me that you at least understand that is just absolutely ludicrous for a guy that could potentially be an all-star next year.
People saying that would be a highway robbery deal for the Bulls, and I'm just sitting here saying, like, we're not looking at the same trade. We are not.
Matt, there's one thing that I wanted to ask you about this, because Zach LaVine has been now put into some of these trade rumors. Do you think that the Bulls are putting him out there and testing the market on him? Do you think it has anything to do with the relationship between him and Jim Boylan?
I mean, is that possible? Yeah, I suppose. I am on the record saying that whole, Jim, you know, Zach offered to pay Jim Boylan's ejection fine for him, so everything's gravy now. Leadership committee and everybody's following Jim's lead, and I was like, please, that's just lip service. I'm still not convinced that Jim and Zach have a great relationship, but if the Bulls front office has any sense, and again, here I am on the other side of the coin. I was just arguing to say I'm worried that John Paxson values Jim Boylan more than Zach LaVine. I would like to think he's smarter than that, but I guess it's within the realm of possibility. But to say that they're flirting with seeing what LaVine's trade value is because there's an issue with his relationship with Jim Boylan is, oh boy. If that's true, that upsets me greatly. And again, there's nothing to suggest that we know that is true. Which also, I saw some people on Twitter yesterday say, like, I can't believe Paxson's thinking about this trade, as if this rumor is now just like a thing that people believe and take as gospel, as this is a deal the Bulls are considering. The Bulls are considering sending Zach LaVine in the seventh pick to the Lakers for number four and Lonzo Ball. And it was like, this all started from Zach Lowe making a completely random hypothetical speculation on his podcast. He even quote tweeted the podcast episode that he posted and said, "Yo, sorry for some confusion. People are thinking that I reported that the Bulls are considering making this deal where they send Zach LaVine to the Lakers. And it was just speculation. And all you aggregators out there and all you bloggers who are looking for clicks and looking for things to talk about, I was not reporting anything. I just pulled a name off the top of my head to talk about some young players that the Lakers might be interested in when they're selling that number four pick to maybe turn around and send to the Pelicans." And everyone on Bulls Twitter was like, panic button, panic button, panic button. The Bulls are trading Zach LaVine. And it was just Zach Lowe talking on a podcast.
what would it take to go to the Wizards and say, you don't want to pay Bradley Beal all that money? How about we start with a Bradley Beal for Zach LaVine deal? And obviously, that's just the start of it. You'd have to add other pieces to it. But the Bulls have the cap space, and they need a star. And Bradley Beal's an all-star. And he's 25, same timeline as this as Carter, same timeline as Lauri Markkanen and some of these younger guys that you're going to bring in. You could guarantee yourself that you could re-sign him. Only 25 years old, and Bradley Beal is a very, very good player. What else would be formulated in that package to make something go down? So you start with Zach LaVine to the Wizards, Bradley Beal to the Bulls. What else has to be included?
Well, so I think whatever else has to be included going from the Bulls to the Wizards. Because I think that, yeah, you know, Beal is on contract for two more seasons. He's due $27 million next year and $28.7 million the year after that, and then he'll be a free agent in 2021. And you would think, all right, well, the Bulls are taking on that money and giving you a pretty darn good player in return in Zach LaVine. But to me, the way that I see it and the way that I think the Wizards would see it is Bradley Beal is an all-NBA caliber player. Zach LaVine might have that upside to him at some point. Although, you know, with the way he plays on the defensive end, it certainly would be hard to see him get there unless he becomes a truly dominant offensive player. Bradley Beal is better than Zach LaVine. I don't think anybody would debate that. So I think even with the contracts and LaVine being on a team-friendly deal compared to, you know, Beal being on a deal that's not a bad deal, you know, for what stars are making in the league right now, I'd say it's pretty average. 27 mil and then 28.7 and a guy in his mid-20s in his prime who's an all-NBA caliber player. I think the Bulls have to send something else to the Wizards in that deal to get
it done. Zach LaVine, the seventh pick, and they can have their choice of two out of the three in Chris Dunn, Denzel Valentine, Chandler Hutchison. And maybe you even have to top it off with a future first-round pick. But I need Bradley Beal to sign on the dotted line immediately that he's going to sign that long-term extension. I mean, I think that because the Wizards are still in cap, they're still in trouble. They're still paying the luxury tax right now.
They are, but they did. I mean, Beal just missed out on making All-NBA this season.
That's true.
So they aren't having to face the horrible situation of they've got Wall on this ugly contract, and if they want to keep Beal, they got to give him the supermax. At least now, if they don't want to trade Beal and keep him around after this contract runs out and extend him, they can sign him on a max, but it doesn't have to be the DPE supermax. Which actually, I don't even know. Isn't there a rule that you can't have two players on that supermax on the same team?
I don't know. That is it's a good question. I'm not sure.
Or no, it's. I think it's a stipulation about a trade. You can't acquire a player that's on that kind of contract when you already have one on your roster.
Interesting.
I think is what it was, because that was some stipulation with people talking about a Kyrie and Anthony Davis trade.
So yeah, you're looking at two more years of Bradley Beal at 27 and 28 million before he's a free agent. That would put him at the age of 28. Yeah, because he's going to be 26 before the season starts, 27 next year, 28. So, yeah, he'll be 28 turning 29 when he becomes a free agent, which at that time you're still in your prime as a star. You still at least have two, 3 good years left in you before you kind of fall out of that window of being in your prime. That would be an interesting case where if the Wizards just wanted to completely hit the reset button, still have to get, nobody's taking the John Wall contract. So the only real asset that they have right now to deal is Bradley Beal. So I wonder if that would be something interesting that they would be, that they would think long and hard about if the Bulls were like, you know, we're going to give you another good piece. He's on a really good contract and you can have our seventh pick and maybe a couple other throw in pieces from the bench. But too, like it's also helping the Wizards out in the fact that they want to get out of the luxury tax and kind of reset here and not end up with Bradley Beal walking in 2 years for nothing.
Which, you know, they'll have to make a decision about that. And I think most of it again goes back to John Wall and that contract. And if they, I mean, that might be the most immovable contract in the league right now, because I don't know who's taking that, especially with his current injury status. And, you know, Beal is a name that people have brought up to us before because of the caliber of player he is and the fact that the Wizards might be looking to, you know, break this all down and make some moves. And that's essentially what led to the Otto trade that happened, you know, leading up to the deadline, is that they were just in a horrible situation cap wise and were trying to shed some of that. And now they're going to be faced with the decision of whether or not they want to shed even more, start over, trade Beal, get off of his remaining money, and you know, not think about signing him to a huge deal a couple years down the road when he's kind of entering the back end of his prime. So, you know, I would be surprised to see anything like that go down, like, between now and Thursday.
This is just a complete hypothetical in this point, but it's just trying to kind of gauge and at least find a ballpark value for Zach
for his value.
Yeah,
right, for his value.
So,
but I mean, would you agree with me though that in that hypothetical, when you're talking about Zach LaVine compared to another in his prime kind of talent in the league, that the Bulls would need to offer more than Zach LaVine for Bradley Beal straight up, even knowing what their contracts
are?
Yeah,
definitely. 100%. For Bradley Beal, yeah, you're going to have to start with your seventh overall pick this year and probably another first round pick. You could probably put protections on that second first round pick, maybe lottery next year, and then after that kind of let it diminish from there. But yeah, the Wizards are going to probably look for two first round picks plus that piece. You know, I'm just trying to compare it to some of the other deals that we've seen go down in the last 2 years. I think you get a lot closer when you're talking Zach LaVine, your first round pick this year, and a protected first round pick in the future. I think you're pretty damn close to fair value trading those three assets for Bradley Beal. But that's where I'm at. Like, you at least, if you're going to trade Zach LaVine away, and we know what the Bulls are trying to do here, they're not waiting around. This is not the approach that they're doing. They're not waiting around to see their guys develop. They didn't do that this year. They've already said that they don't want to do that. They're talking about bringing in veterans to sign for free agency this summer to be better next year and be a team that can contend in the East. I don't know if you buy into that or not, but that's the Bulls' belief right now. Like, they didn't trade for Otto Porter Jr. just to turn around and trade Zach LaVine and have to sit around and wait for your guys to develop for another 2 or 3 years. Like, the Bulls are probably in a situation right now where they're going to try to step on the gas a little bit here. And by doing that, they're going to sign veterans this offseason. So that's why it makes no sense to turn Zach LaVine into Lonzo Ball, who's going to be a project, and turn him into the fourth pick, which you're going to have to wait 2 or 3 years to actually see what he's going to be in Jarrett Culver. And he might be a really good player, but you're shifting your timeline in terms of the rebuild. What the Bulls want to do right now and what some fans want them to do. Like, originally you and I said, let's get this right through the draft and let's acquire as many young assets as we can and try to strike gold in the draft and continue to build like some of these other teams have. The Bulls didn't do that necessarily. They've kind of switched routes in year two. So we've got to think about it in those terms too, is what the Bulls are thinking.
Yeah. And, you know, I think as we're getting ready to enter into this next phase of the NBA calendar year, and, you know, we've got the draft in less than a week and the free agency after that, like, we kind of all know now, right, what we believe the Bulls' goal is for this offseason and then into next year. They want to add a couple veteran pieces to round out their roster, round out their bench, make their bench better than it was last year, which isn't a hard test because it was unwatchably awful, and ideally find themselves a point guard. Maybe in the draft, maybe free agency, maybe both. And maybe that means the departure of Chris Dunn. But that they feel pretty darn good right now about 2 through 4 or 2 through 5 in their starting lineup. Zach, Otto, Lowry, Wendell. Got to round out the bench. They've got some money to spend. What we're hearing most likely is that they're going to spread it out. Sorry, all of those of you who want D'Angelo Russell. Sorry, all of those of you who want Malcolm Brogdon and the Bulls to offer something that the Bucks can't match. Unlikely. It's going to be some underwhelming free agency signings. And the one thing that might not be underwhelming and might actually create some excitement is if something happens between now and draft night when the Bulls are on the clock. That is the one element to this that might be exciting as we try to work towards the Bulls being watchable next season and taking a jump. You know, whether that's you believe the Bulls can be a 30-win team next year, a 40-win team next year, or, you know, some of you psychos out there even beyond. But we all know what the steps are, and now it's just waiting to see how those steps unfold.
So yeah, we'll find out less than a week away from the NBA draft. Do you have any thoughts on this? 331-979-1369, the place to hit us up. Wrapping up the week here, NBA Finals over, NBA season over, rumor season just starting. So we'll find out if more information comes out this weekend about potential deals and if the Bulls are really looking to shop around their seventh pick or other guys on their roster. So things could get interesting in the next week or so. So I'm very, very excited leading up to draft night next Thursday. But I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you again to everybody who listens out there and subscribes to Locked On Bulls. You can do that at Himalaya. Himalaya is the best place to get our podcast. They're free, super easy to use, personally curated playlists made by their expert podcast tastemakers. So you're getting people who know exactly what you want and being able to show you all those podcasts available. That's been the most difficult thing and the biggest hurdle to jump with podcasts is where to start and how to discover great podcasts. They have themed collections and shows to help you with that podcast discovery. You can find everything from comedy to mystery, thriller, and sports. You can follow us there so you as a listener can follow your favorite show and also the creators of those shows. You can like on comment on individual episodes. So you really, really like something about an episode we did this week, you're able to like it, and you're also able to comment about what you like and don't like. All of our episodes at Himalaya are shareable through playlists. So you want to grab a couple shows from us, maybe a couple shows from Locked On Cubs, and maybe a few shows from the Locked On Bears show, and put them all together in a playlist and send it to your friends and family. You can do that with Himalaya. So Himalaya is an awesome place to subscribe to our show, Locked On Bulls. Every single Locked On Podcast Network show is available on Himalaya. It's free. You can find it on the Apple App Store, Google Play Store. And don't forget, when you're there, go ahead and follow Locked On Bulls. So thank you again to Himalaya for sponsoring our show today. You can get our shows also on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play. Anywhere you get your podcasts, you can get Locked On Bulls. So make sure you're subscribed so you get our episodes as soon as they drop. Our episodes today were also sponsored by Hotels.com, Untuckit, and Grip 6 Belt. Thank you to all three of those sponsors for being absolutely wonderful to us and sponsoring our shows over the last few weeks. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com